Good morning. Man, what a joy to be here. I hate it when I'm about to speak and I think to myself, this has been such a great worship service. I hope I don't mess it up. Man, Jeff, the song service has been great. Really, really great. Michael, good job on the Lord's Supper. I don't know a lot about him. What I do know is that he married up. Anytime you marry a Darla, you are marrying up. So I know that. And Stacy, what great announcements. And man, pretty bold as well for calm mornings for school-going families and that educators would have short meetings. That is a miracle, I think, probably, for that to happen. And the best of it all, ladies and gentlemen, she just walked in a minute ago. I hate to embarrass her, but I want us all to welcome Sister Gabby, who has been with us. And we're really proud of you, really proud of you. Hey, this is a reunion for Darla and me. We came in and we have been welcomed by faces and friends that we haven't seen in many, many years. It was great to be with the Boones, and it was great to see Brad Cheeves, and it was great to be with the Osbournes who came back, and the Allens, and the Crocketts, and the Herds. I mean, just so many families from the past who had such great impact on us. It was good to see the Armors as well. Good to see the Bairds back in the back and receive a nice book that he put together about Churches of Christ, our history in the state of Oklahoma. It has been a great, great reunion. But at the same time, I am scared to death standing up here. And it happens actually every time I stand before an audience like this, not only because there are great preachers and great presidents that are out amongst us, but it all kind of goes back to something that happened when I was 16 years of age. So I grew up in a naval aviator family. We moved around, but we settled in eastern Oklahoma, a small town called Tahlequah. The young men of that youth group got to go and lead services in a lot of places, and one Sunday morning in July, when I was 16, I was invited to preach at the Moody Church of Christ. Now, I was invited to preach at this small church, not because I was a good preacher, but because my grandmother, Mama Dean, was related to half of the people in this congregation. So that morning, my grandmother and I, we got into her red Chevy Citation, drove out to Moody. It's a suburb of Tahlequah. I am preaching away, and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, and I take my jacket off and put it down. Man, it just keeps getting hotter and hotter, and so my eyesight begins to kind of narrow down a little bit. It becomes kind of tunnel vision. The next thing I know, the room is spinning, and I then wake up laying flat on my back on the stage. There are six adults that are all kind of peered over like this and trying to wave air in me. And one of the older fellas says, "Hey, he's coming too. Let's all back off. Let's let him up." And so they helped me back to my feet, and I did what any self-respecting 16-year-old wannabe preacher would do. I finished my sermon. Church is over. Mama Deem and I get back in her red Chevy Citation, and I was her favorite grandchild. Okay, I mean, my sisters, if they were here, they would admit to that. She never had a crossword or a criticism of me, and I'm wondering, what in the world is she going to say? And we're driving back to Tahlequah, and she's looking out the side window, and after a few minutes, she turns, and she says, "Well," and I thought, okay, here it comes. She says, "Well, you don't see that every Sunday morning now, do you?" So I rest that afternoon, go back to church that night at South College Church of Christ. One of my buddies comes up to me and he says, "Hey, John, I heard you preached at Moody this morning. How did it go?" And I looked around to make sure Mama Dean was not within earshot. And I said, "It was unbelievable." And he said, "Unbelievable? What do you mean?" And I said, "It was unbelievable. I had six people come forward during my sermon." So if I go down right here, I would really like Dan Branch and Mike Boone to come forward. Actually, if they would, that would be awesome. Well, man, Gabby, you have become a part of this community in a very special way. We love choices. We love to make choices. When Darla and I were young married couples, almost every year we got this close to becoming fabulously rich. Every year at the same time. Some of y'all might remember, you might have received the same letter that we got. It had a fella's picture on the outside of the envelope. A guy named Ed McMahon, he was the kind of the sidekick for Johnny Carson, and it was the Publisher's Clearinghouse Sweepstakes. And we would fill this out, and we just knew that we were going to be the ones that were going to win. And we knew that we were going to be the ones that would win, and they would bring the big check to our door, and every year we would get money for the rest of our life, because not everybody filled this out. And because what Darla and I were going to do with our money was going to be really good. We were going to give it to church. We were going to give it to our university. I endorse both of those things, ladies and gentlemen. We were going to pay off people's mortgages, and we were going to send kids to college. We might buy ourselves a new refrigerator. I mean, we were going to really do good things with this money, but we never subscribed to a magazine, and we never won the sweepstakes. But it was sure fun choosing what we were going to do with all of those dollars. We love choice. So let me ask you. Let's say you could pick community wherever you wanted to live. What would be your ideal? Would you live at the beach? Would you live in the mountains? Would you live in a vibrant big city like right here? By the way, I know when I ask this question of Texans, it's always going to be somewhere in Texas where they're going to choose their community. I love young people coming up to school at Oakland Christian from Texas. I want them to bring a bag of dirt. I want them to spread it on the campus because I want them to be able to tell their grandparents that they are being educated on Texas soil in their university experience. Would you move north? Would you move south? Would you go east or would you go west? What would be your perfect community? You know, there are a couple of examples of God actually giving this choice to some individuals. One made a good choice, one made a really bad choice. So in Genesis chapter 13, Abram and Lot, they have been together, their families, their flocks, their herds, and they're having so much success, and they're doing so well that the reality is the land can't sustain them both, and fights are breaking out between the men servants of both Abram and Lot. And so Abram calls Lot in and says, we've got to separate. There's just too much of us. The land can't sustain us. And Abram said, Lot, if you choose to go right, I will go left. And if you choose to go left, I will go right. And so Lot looked around and he saw the plains of Jordan and it was well watered. And it really reminded him of the garden of God. And he chose that area. And he made a bad choice. Then in Ruth chapter 1, we have the same thing happen. So Elimelech and his wife Naomi and their two sons, they leave Jordan and they go to Moab. You see, there is a drought and a famine that occurs where they are, and they have to go somewhere else to make it. And when they end up in Moab, the two sons meet women and marry them. But then within 10 years, Elimelech dies. The two sons die as well. But Naomi hears that things are better back home. And so she decides that she's going to return to Jordan. And she talks to her two daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth. And they say, we want to go with you. And Naomi says, you really shouldn't do that. You need to stay here with your family, with your parents, with those that you know. And she convinces Orpah to stay, but Ruth says, no, I'm going with you. And in fact, what Ruth says is one of those passages that we like to reflect on and is often a part of a marriage ceremony. She says to her mother-in-law, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. And your people will become my people and your God, my God. And nothing will separate us except death. And if anything does, may God treat me ever so severely because of that. So Ruth returned home with Naomi, and she made a good choice. But when God talks to us about our community, it doesn't matter to him as much where we live as what community we're a part of and how we live in that community. I love the reference in Acts chapter 2 to the new, brand new church that had formed and was gathering shortly after Pentecost. Here's what Acts chapter 2 says about the community of believers. I mean, Acts chapter 2, beginning in verse 42, and I'm going to read through the end of the chapter. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and miraculous signs were done by the apostles. All the believers were together, and they had everything in common, selling their possessions and goods. They gave to anyone as he had need. Every day, they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those who were being saved. What a beautiful community. But it was a community that also bothered some people. In fact, Saul of Tarsus took it upon himself to destroy this community. He was convinced that this community and the way they were living and what they were doing and what they were believing was actually cutting against the very fabric of his faith tradition. So he did everything in his power to destroy this group. About 25 or 30 years later, he actually wrote about this faith group. And he changed his mind completely. You know the road to Damascus. You know the change that overcame Saul of Tarsus, Paul the Apostle. Here's what he says about community in Romans chapter 12. The very community that he had become a part of, the very community that we are a part of. Paul says, be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another above yourselves. Never be lacking in zeal, but keep your spiritual fervor serving the Lord. Be joyful in hope, patient in affliction, faithful in prayer. Share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Don't be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So, our daughter, Abby, is a graduate student at the University of Texas at Austin. She's studying clinical psychology. A couple years ago, she goes, Dad, you really got to read some stuff from this clinical social worker, this person who teaches, and she's really, really wise, and she's got a lot of good things to say. So she put me on to Brené Brown, a fellow Texan for you all. So I read out of her book, Rising Strong. And she talked about a couple of encounters that she had that she did not understand, but that really point, I believe, to community. So her first encounter was this. She had agreed to go speak at a conference. She didn't really want to go to speak at this conference, but she finally gave in and decided she would go, and she had a bad experience. In fact, she got there, and she had a roommate in the hotel room that she didn't know, and this person wasn't very... Let's just say she didn't stay on her side of the room and keep everything nice and straight and neat. And Brené had a really bad experience. And so she had decided in her mind that that was proof that people didn't try hard. They just kind of phoned it in. And so she went back to prove that hypothesis with her friends. She told that to her friends. And her friend said, life is hard. You can't say that. People try their best. They do what they can. So that kind of confused Brené a bit. She then talked about a second encounter that she had. Her mom had just had surgery in Houston. So surgery had occurred that day. She and her sisters were with her mom the whole day. Late that night, they go across the street, leave mom in the hospital room. They go across the street to an all-night diner. And they're eating in this diner, and Brené says that there is a homeless individual who is in there, And an altercation occurs, and he is kicked out of the diner. They finish their meal, and as they go outside, Brené sees this homeless individual, and she sees him fairly close up, and she can tell that he has really suffered physically. He has been beaten up before, and so he's somewhat disfigured. And she also sees a look in his eyes, and she interpreted it as this fellow saying, "How has my life gotten to this state?" And she began to approach him, and he scurried away. Well, early the next morning, Brené returns to the hospital because she's going to go back and visit her mom. And as she walks into the foyer of the hospital in the gathering place, there is beautiful music that's being played at a grand piano that's in there. And the song is Memories. And she looks over and she realizes the fella who's playing the piano is the homeless individual that was kicked out of the diner the night before. She goes over to the welcome desk and she says, "Hey, that fellow playing the piano, he's a homeless individual." And the lady working behind the desk said, "We know. You know, every morning for the last year he comes in and he plays one or two songs before security is alerted and they come and they make him leave." Brené went up to her mom's hospital room and she said, "Mom, I've had these two experiences and I just don't know what to make of them." And her mom, laying there in the hospital bed, says, "Brené, here, get in bed with me. I want to tell you about your grandmother, Meemaw." And so Brené climbs into bed and listens to this story. Brené's mom says that our family grew up in San Antonio. We were about a half a block away from where the train tracks came into town, and it actually, Brené, went up a hill, and so the train always slowed down going up this hill. In fact, it slowed down so much that this was a place where hobos would jump on the train or jump off the train. Now, a hobo was a migrant worker who traveled to the oil fields or agriculture. And let's face it, they traveled on the trains illegally. This is how they caught a ride to where they wanted to go. Brené's mom said, "Meemaw, your grandmother, she had 5 metal plates and 5 metal bowls and 5 metal cups and 5 forks that she had under the sink at our house. And your grandmother, Meemaw, would always prepare meals with more food than the family needed. And she said often there would be a knock at the door during mealtime, and Meemaw would go to the door and she would come back and she would fill up those plates and bowls and cups and she would take them and she would feed hobos that were on the front porch or maybe down in the swing in the yard. And after they ate, they would bring their dishes back and put them on the front porch, and she would clean them off and she would put them back under the sink." Brené was amazed and she said, "Well, Mom, I've never heard this story. How did the hobos know that they could come to your house and they would be treated like that?" And her mom said, "Well, the hobos would actually leave a mark on the gate or on the fence or on the curb where there was a family that would show hospitality and generosity and maybe provide a warm meal. Brené, we were marked." When I heard the phrase, "That person is an easy mark," I always thought to myself, they were gullible or naive or you could take advantage of them. The actual beginning of that phrase was, these are generous people. These are people who are marked by something special to take care of you. And this family was marked by the hobos as that kind of community, just like we are. But Brené said, "Okay, so I understand why the hobos would stop there, but why did Meemaw feel comfortable providing for them?" And Brené's mom said, "Well, a couple of things. One, Meemaw's best friend lived across the street, and this best friend of hers had a brother who went to the war. And when he came back from the war, He was a shattered man, and he became a hobo. He traveled the trains and found work. So Renee, Meemaw, she knew someone personally who was a hobo, so she knew hobos. Second reason is pretty simple as well. You see, Meemaw, she was an alcoholic. Meemaw was a victim of domestic abuse. Meemaw was a divorcee. Meemaw was also an other. She considered herself an other, and because she felt like she was another person that maybe didn't fit in, she had a special affinity for others that didn't fit in. The reality is there are two kinds of people. There are people that have complicated lives and are sinners and need God and need Jesus and need each other. That's one category of people. The other category of people, those folks are perfect. They don't have anything that goes wrong. Everything is good all the time, and they don't need God, and they don't need anybody else. I will tell you, there's nobody in that second category. We're all in the first category. And the third reason why Meemaw felt comfortable with these individuals is because she was comfortable with need. She knew about need, and she had been taken care of in her life, so she knew what it was like to be in need and to have someone help you out. It takes a strong person to provide to someone in need, but in some ways, it actually might even require more strength to be willing to accept need from someone else. Brothers and sisters, let us be a community where we are marked by our generosity and our hospitality and our care for one another. Help us know that we are all in the same situation that everybody is in, and that's what makes us better people. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, in whatever you do, treat others as you would have them treat you, because this sums up the law and the prophets. That's how we as Christians are to live. That's how we in this community serve each other and serve others. Gabby, welcome to this community. Well, this is a special time to get together. This is a special, special group. I'm grateful to have the chance to share a few minutes. And I'll be real curious if any of you come back next Sunday when I'm here again. So, God bless you. Please, let's stand while we sing.